Hello and welcome to another episode of But Why. The podcast is all about digging into big questions and tricky topics via honest conversation. And this week we're going to be looking at spiking, and I'm joined by my guest Maya Howells, who also is in Peckham in Southeast London. Are you there right now, or are we just down the road from
you? I am. It's just quite weird, isn't it?
Yeah. I would ask you your address, exactly where, but I think that's probably not safe. But we are probably really close. And then yesterday I was like, oh, we could do it in the same room, which would be nice, but you need a different, a complicated mic setup. So we're just down the road. Anyway, I'll carry on with my intro. By trade, she's a creative director, but she's recently founded At I've Been Spiked, a safe space for victims who have been spiked to share their stories, seek support and demand action. She started the platform in March 2020, shortly after her drink was spiked in February 2020. She is now one of the leading activists fighting for change in the current state of drink spiking in the UK and the general field of violence against women and girls. Most recently, and how I've come to meet her, she is the host and producer of Pricks, a podcast which explores the spiking epidemic and looks to get under the skin of the problem. It's a bit wordy, but brilliant. Brilliant. I'm really actually fascinated about this conversation, but before I really get into it, I have three more lightweight questions for you. Number one, how are you really? What star sign are you, and what's your favorite crisp?
Oh my god, these are big questions. How am I really? I'm feeling great. The sun is shining. I think it always makes everything so much better.
I'm doing some sighs. I feel like I'm someone who is definitely really affected by the seasons, and to kind of make it through to a patch of weather is going to be sunny all week, you feel a real sense of gratitude that I've stayed sane this winter.
100%. I'm exactly the same. When it's winter, I'm not the same person.
No.
My star sign is I'm a Virgo. 09/09 is my birthday. And my favourite crisp, the thing is, I love crisps. Like, I'm obsessed with crisps. Do you know what I love? Tyrrells. Are these called Tyrrells? Mm. Tyrrells?
Yeah.
The red pepper ones.
Great. I feel like Tyrrells don't get as much of a shout out as they ought to, but they're a great crisp.
I think they're amazing. They're probably one of my favourite crisps, but I do love... I don't think there's any crisp I don't like.
No. I had Catelyn Moran, the journalist, on, who's obviously a high-profile journalist, and she said that one of the things she's most passionate about in life is finding crisps that are folded over in her packets, and she's photographed everyone she's ever had.
And the ones that are folded over are always more seasoned as well.
Exactly. You know it. You know it. Crisps are really great. They never let you down, do they?
My favourite snack. To be honest, I'm more of a crisp person than a chocolate person.
Yeah. The thing is, I eat chocolate because I'm kind of craving. It's kind of a different relationship. Whereas, you're more consistent with a crisp.
With a crisp. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Hats off to crisp. So I'm here to talk to you about spiking, and I'm going to be really honest, actually. When the press release came through about your new podcast, I was just like, oh, drink spiking, that feels like very like 1990s, early 2000s, which is ridiculous. I mean, is it still a big problem? Is that a common misconception? And yeah.
I think, like, even myself, before I'd got spiked, I kind of saw spiking as this thing that, I always say this thing that happened in, like, Ibiza. You know, when I was younger, I used to watch programs like Sunsea Sex and Suspicious Parents. And I always assumed that that kind of environment was where spiking happened, and it wouldn't happen to me. Although, I guess, as women, we are always taught to watch our drinks or to always be aware of our surroundings. So I guess it's kind of just ingrained into us to be a bit more careful on a night out. But spiking, I'd never really heard anyone speak about it before. My sister actually got spiked 2 months before I did. And that was like my first close to home account of spiking. And then, 2 months after, then I had my drink spiked. And I was like, okay, maybe this is a bigger issue than I thought.
Yeah, that's a bit of a freaky coincidence, isn't it?
Yeah, really odd. When I went to A&E to go and like get checked over or whatever, because I had loads of physical injuries from being spiked, she said to me like, oh, I've had my drink spiked before. I know how horrible it is. And then that's when I started to question, okay, just so happens that this nurse that's seeing me has had her drink spiked. My sister's had her drink spiked 2 months before me. How many people is this happening to? And when I started sharing my story on social media, then loads of people in my circle were coming forward being like, oh, I've had my drink spiked too. I know how horrible it is. And that's when I started to realize that maybe it's a bigger issue, but people just aren't talking about it in the way they should be.
Yeah.
But I think it's definitely a common misconception that, I don't know, it maybe doesn't happen anymore, or it's not a big issue. But yeah, I think more recently people are talking about it.
Do you mind talking about the experience of what that was like for you when you got your drink spiked?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Do you mind like talking through how the experience was for you?
Yeah, 100%. So I had my drink spiked at, it was like, it's a club local to me in Peckham. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention the club name, but it's just a club local to me. I've been there so many times. You know, it's one of those ones where I've been there so many times, I could probably walk home with my eyes closed. Like, that's how many times I've been there. But it'd been rented privately for a friend's birthday. So therefore, I think I felt even more safe in that mm-hmm. environment, because everyone around me was people that I knew. And yeah, I'd had like one or two drinks before I left the house. I wasn't really drinking that much at that time. So when I got there, I was sober. Well, in my eyes, like sober for a night out.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a really high card limit at the bar. And so I had to buy three drinks. So I bought two drinks for my mates and one drink for me. Mm-hmm. And I passed those two drinks back, like literally turned my back for like a split second. And I think in that moment, that's when my drink was spiked, because...
Wow, at the bar?
Yeah, because I remember everything up until taking that first sip of that drink, and then it's complete blackout until waking up in bed the next day. And my sister was at that party as well. So she'd actually got me home. Obviously, she'd had her drink spiked 2 months before. But she was kind of a bit confused as to what had happened, because... you know, I'd been with some mates and then suddenly I just disappeared and she couldn't find me anywhere and she wanted to go home. And so she looked everywhere for me and couldn't find me until she started, she started to question where I was. Mm-hmm. And she asked a boy to go into the boys' toilets to check if there was anything weird in there, because that's the only place obviously she hadn't looked. Mm-hmm. And there was like a toilet door that had been locked for an extended period of time. He was like, oh, I think there's someone in there. And so my sister just went in and she like bashed at the door, and eventually I opened it, and at that point I'd already smashed and fallen over and smashed my face.
Wow. So
when she found me, obviously I was like covered in blood, and she was just like, what on earth has happened? And so I guess we've had to like fill the blanks of what had happened, because no one was with me, no one saw me.
And when you say blackout, literally, because sometimes, I mean, not great times in my life when I've drunk to excess, I have had patchy memory. But you say literally cannot remember a single...
I have never blacked out from alcohol in like, you know, it's patchy, but you still remember this.
Yeah.
This is complete, like, and when I woke up the next day, usually if I'm like hungover or whatever, I can't get straight out of bed.
Yeah.
But I was able to jump straight out of bed, and I was so confused.
Mm.
This didn't feel like a hangover, do you know what I mean? I knew instantly that something had happened. And also, I'd never sustained, like, I like going out and I like having a good time, but I'd never sustained physical injuries from going out drinking. Like, that's something that's never happened to me, and it's something that I'd never want to happen to me. So it was very bizarre. And I think when my sister found me, she was kind of, she hadn't put two and two together. She just thought maybe like, I don't know, like I'd taken something or like I'd had too much to drink. But it all happened in like the space of like an hour to an hour and a half. It was really quick.
Wow.
And yeah, so I went to A&E to go and get, because I'd split my chin.
Wow.
I'd smashed my nose. That's why I was bleeding from my nose. So that's why I was covered in blood. And it later turns out like I had a concussion. I also fractured my wrist.
Wow.
But obviously I was only going to A&E to go and get my chin stitched up. But yeah, I had more injuries than I thought. But yeah, it was really weird because it was like pre-COVID times. So I had to go to A&E by myself. And it was really, really isolating. And like, to be honest, I didn't really want to accept that something weirder had happened. So I just kind of felt a bit numb.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the nurse said to me, like, I think you've been spiked. Like, I've been spiked too. I know how horrible it is. All your injuries suggest that this is the case. But it's too late to run any tests.
Oh, really?
In that moment, I knew that, because with my sister's experience, like when they tried to report it to the police, my mum and my sister, the police said they wouldn't investigate if she didn't have blood tests. So I already knew that there was no point of speaking to the police about it.
So the irony is you need to really be going to the police when you're in that intoxicated state, which by the sounds of it, you wouldn't have a hope in hell because you don't know what's going on.
I literally, that night, I wouldn't have been able to tell anyone what was happening to me because the drugs that were used to spite me were so strong. They had such a bizarre effect. Like, obviously, they affect people differently. But I apparently, like, obviously later on, filled in some of the blanks. Like, I left hospital and it was actually a guy that sent me a message, which was quite sweet, saying, oh, I saw you out last night and you weren't yourself. I hope you're okay. Hmm. And he was like, you were like saying stuff that was really bizarre and you wouldn't usually say. And I just thought, like, I wanted to check if you were all right. And I was like, oh, this is what happened. I got spiked. And he was like, that's awful. So I don't know. And then after, I guess the after effects of that is just the embarrassment that you feel.
And not to put words in your mouth, but you've been violated. That's the thing. Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing if you drink to a point of any kind of patchy memory loss, which is also not great, but you've elected to do that to yourself. So it's kind of, you do want to take responsibility. But the idea that someone's, violated you, do you remember any kind of difference in the taste of your drink or nothing like that?
No. I mean, a lot of the drugs that are used to spite people, they're so developed that they don't have any odour, they don't have any taste. Or if they do, it's very, very slight, like just like a slight salty taste. You might just think, you know, they have like tequila and salt behind the bar. It could have just been, you know, a slip up or something, or maybe the cup hasn't been washed properly. You wouldn't realize it. And so, and especially if you're just, you don't assume it's going to happen. So you're not always looking out for, oh my God, does my drink taste a little bit different? Do you know what I mean? You're just there to drink your drink. And especially if it's from the bar, I don't know, you just assume it will be fine. But the thing is, like, that I've had to live with and deal with is I still don't know who spiked me. The person that spiked me is still out there, you know. I don't know if it was someone at that party or that was someone that I know. I don't know if it was someone from behind the bar, but someone spiked me that night. I don't know what their intention was.
That was going to be my next question, because again, maybe it's off the mark, but I always saw it as, unfortunately, hand in hand with sexual abuse, that you know, that it's date raping, for want of a better piece of language, that people would spike your drink and then sexually take advantage of you. But as far as you're aware, that didn't happen to you.
I mean, I don't know if I was taken advantage of, because I was found in boys' toilets, which I can make assumptions about what had happened to me. I don't think I was raped, because I think I would have known, I would have been able to feel that. But I don't know if I was still taken advantage of. And that's just something that I've had to live with.
You must be like constantly kind of, well, again, apologies for projecting, but you're trying to go over something in your mind that you, it's so weird to experience something in your body and not be able to recollect it, isn't it?
Yeah, I was so, like, at first, like, I was so desperate to try and, like, think about all of the possibilities, you know, the what ifs, and, you know, sitting there trying to recollect anything. And I just simply couldn't. And I remember just afterwards, I think it was in March, I May Destroy You, Michaela Cole came out.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously that's the first time I'd ever seen spiking on screen. And it was weirdly triggering, because it was like, in the best possible way, but it was like I saw my experience on screen for the first time. And it was so, so similar. Like, I think the way that she, like, lost... she lost her legs and stuff like that and fell, and I can only imagine that's similar to my experience and what happened to me.
Yeah, that's as you were speaking early on, that's the scene that came to mind. And that, you know what, that is really, as you say, one of the first times, or if only times, I can think of having seen it documented. And yet you've done a run, you know, a quick survey of people that you've come into contact with, and people are like, oh yeah, that's happened to me. I mean, it's really terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, I just think up until relatively recently, it was such a taboo subject. And I think it is because it's surrounded by so much shame. You feel so much shame. I mean, a lot of it does happen in nightclubs and at bars and stuff. And you might have already had a drink anyway. So a lot of people blame themselves and they don't want to talk about it. And then obviously, especially if it ends in something more sinister to say. It's just surrounded by shame and embarrassment. So a lot of people don't talk about it in the way that maybe they should.
Yeah. And for the podcast, have you spoken to people about the process of trying to prosecute? Because obviously your sister had no luck. But are there situations where prosecuting can be effective?
So I've spoken to like nurses, to police officers, to lawyers, to psychologists, and to the head of the Nighttimes Industry Association. Mm-hmm. And I gave them a run for their money because at the end of the day, the system clearly isn't working. Because the lawyer that I spoke to, she said that she's never seen a case of spiking reached court unless it's ended in something more sinister, such as sexual assault. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, before I even did this podcast, I didn't know that spiking in itself isn't an offence. What? It's only offence if it's followed by something more sinister. So standalone, it's not an offence. And that was shocking to me because for me, it's like grievous bodily harm, you know?
100%. And it's a non-consensual act on a body, isn't it?
Yeah, and like if that, you don't know what effect that drug is going to have on you, right? That drug could trigger something else in your body. It could trigger psychosis. It could trigger a range of different things. And it's been put in your drink against your will, but it's not a standalone offence. So, I mean, in a lot of cases that I hear, sometimes people get spiked and then they make it home and they're safe and they don't have any physical injuries. But also there's so much trauma that comes with someone doing that to you against your will, and I think it should be treated in that way.
I'm actually a bit gobsmacked about that.
Yeah, I was gobsmacked as well, to be honest.
And just like you, I can't help. It's kind of incomprehensible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's massive flaws in the system as it is at the moment. Obviously, there's a drink spiking inquiry going on. The Home Affairs Committee at the moment, and it's ongoing, and I'd like to see some change from it. But for me, doing something like even making spiking a criminal offence in its own and increasing the time that someone gets for spiking, that to me is kind of pointless if we're not getting cases through in the first place. Yeah. If we can't access testing and we can't actually report our crimes to the police, then what is the point of increasing it? Because it's like, it's out of reach anyway.
Yeah.
So for me, it's all about making some kind of long-lasting change and some systemic change as well. And I guess that's why I also kind of work in that kind of field of violence against women and girls, because I think it's a really important discussion that needs to be had. And mm-hmm. I think it definitely has a massive impact on spiking.
100%. I'm doing something like my brain's slowed down because I'm just, it's making me realize not only is this a untalked about subject, you know, I'm thinking about my friends now. I'm wondering how many of them have been spiked. It's just not a conversation we had. And I think that is exactly as you say, because wrongly, you always think, well, yeah, maybe in some ways it was my fault, because if I'd have been stone cold sober, or if I hadn't have taken myself to this club, or if I hadn't have done this, then it wouldn't have happened. But that's absolutely bonkers, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you do blame yourself, and it's understandable why we blame ourselves, because we're taught that's what we should do.
Yeah.
But also, just sometimes people don't even realise they've been spiked, or they don't want to think about it. They kind of want to bury it down.
Yeah. In some ways, you'd go, oh, it'd be easier just to write that off as one of those rogue nights. Yeah, let's never think about it again, because the violation and the fact that, yeah, because the reality of it is so terrifying. And also, you just want to know what substance has been on your body, or I would. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to know what was used to spike me. And I guess that's kind of why I've been spiked, because I was doing my own research, trying to work out what it was like, what symptoms did I have, or what was I showing? What drug was used to spike me? That's kind of how it started. And I was just Googling online, trying to like work it out. And it was literally like next to no information, just all in one place. It was all like spread out, like Talk to Frank or any of those pages, going through those kind of drugs and looking at their side effects. But there wasn't like a set space to go and find it. So that's kind of why I started I've Been Spiked. And I guess it's kind of selfish, because it was kind of for my own peace of mind, but then also to help other people who are going through the same thing.
So when you went to A&E, were they not able to do any kind of tests to find out what drugs had been in your system?
No, I mean, it was like, obviously it was pre-COVID. And also I'm like a young, healthy woman. Yeah. And I have a massive sense of guilt going to A&E anyway, just because I'm like, I shouldn't be here. Like there's people like, old women and stuff waiting there. And obviously I'd rather them go before me. So I kind of just proper, I think I did play down maybe what was going on with me, just because I felt guilty. I don't want to waste anyone's time, you know. Obviously I did have to get my chin stitched up, so that was important. But apart from that, I didn't want to complain too much about other injuries. And when I got seen, which was like, I must have been sat there for like 4 or 5 hours, because, and that's no criticism to the NHS, like obviously they're doing an amazing job. And the nurse was just like, you should have been seen a lot earlier because you have a really bad concussion. She was like, if you started like being sick or anything, like that could have been like really dangerous. And I was like, yeah, I just didn't want to, I don't know, I didn't want to waste anyone's time. And she was like, it's so, by that time I'd already been asleep, bearing in mind, and then I'd woken up and I'd spent then 5 hours in the A&E. All the any drugs that used to spike me would have left my system. So it was pretty rubbish position to be in. Just felt really like hopeless, and like I couldn't, there was nothing I could have done, you know.
If you were to give advice to someone who, if you could give advice to yourself, would you have pushed more for some kind of investigation at that point?
I think the thing is, even this was 2 years ago now, I think things have changed. I think things have changed a bit since then. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe now, if it were to happen to me, the police would be more on it, just because the conversation's been widened, and obviously with the introduction of spiking via injection as well, I think people are taking victims' voices more seriously. But at that point, I don't think it would have made any difference, you know,
really?
If I'm going to be completely honest.
Really?
Just because I saw the way that they handled my sister's case.
Mm-hmm.
Why would it be any different for me?
No. So talk to me about spiking by injection. What does that entail, other than what's obvious by the name?
It's really weird, because the first case of spiking via injection I heard about was in Liverpool,
mm-hmm.
And that was in October last year. And it was running a page like, I've been spiked, and then someone telling me about spiking via injection. I was a bit like, I don't even know what to suggest to protect people, because it's like, this is taking a whole nother level now of, basically, if you don't want to get spiked, then don't go outside, because there's not much you can do to stop someone from spiking you with a needle.
So that's just like, and you then feel it, or is it such a small needle that the theory is you don't feel it?
Well, from people that I've spoken to through doing the podcast, apparently a lot of people haven't felt side effects from it, because if you were to spike someone with a needle and it to have any effect, it would have to be held in for a long period of time, and it would have to hit the bloodstream. So I don't know if it's, luckily, I don't know if that's the right mm-hmm. word, but a lot of people haven't experienced the side effects apart from the trauma of being literally stabbed with a needle on a night out.
Wow.
And then, yeah, so it's a really weird, I don't know if you can call it a phenomenon, but it's a really weird thing that's happened, because I think a lot of it was just scaremongering. I personally haven't heard about any men that have been spiked by injection. It's only been women. And it just seemed like a, you know, it coincided with Freshers Week. And it just seemed, because it happened in one place, and it was happening in Nottingham, then it was happening in this place, then this place, and this place, and this place. And weirdly, it just seemed like a lot of people got the same idea of how to
freak someone out.
Women.
Yeah, attack women. Because, you're not, as you say, you're not getting a substance into anyone's body, because actually the process of injecting someone is not that straightforward. So you're literally just kind of, not just, because it's not a just, you're stabbing someone with a needle, basically, as an act of violence.
Yeah, so obviously I didn't know about like the fact that a lot of people hadn't experienced side effects from reports until doing the podcast. But I guess in a way, it's still awful, but it makes sense, because it just seems like such a an act of violence just to scare people.
Yeah, so it is broadly in the same thing, but it is quite a different. Yeah, I mean, you would feel the same. You'd feel violated either way, but you're not. Yeah, you're not losing chapters of your life via
and it's blackout. It's a really weird thing, because for me, I felt like, you know, I've been running Spiked for 2 years now, and it was only really till October, when the spiking via injection thing started happening, that people started paying attention and wanted to know about spiking. And for me, I always say this, I think it's because as humans, we only really respond to things when we can physically see something. So with spiking via injection, you've literally got a prick mark on your arm, right?
Right.
Whereas if I go to someone, I say, I've been spiked, my drink's been spiked, it's my word against theirs. And it sounds horrible, but sometimes people only want to hear things when the story's gory or the, something's happened. Like, I've spoken to victims and they've like even spoken to press and stuff like that. And then they're like, if nothing's actually happened to them afterwards, like they haven't been sexually assaulted or they haven't had any physical injuries, press don't want to report their story.
Yeah.
But really, we don't see the trauma and the after effects of being spiked. But yeah.
No, I think you're exactly right. The unseen stuff is hard for people to wrap their heads around, isn't it? Until it happens to them or a family member or a friend. And then you think, oh, why isn't this getting the attention that it deserves? But it's totally unseen. So, is there anything else particularly that you've learned through the podcast that you hadn't, that you didn't know before? So much, maybe.
I think there's so much, but I mean, we delve a lot more into like incel culture and stuff, which I guess is something that I've experienced through trolling, through running the page.
Have you?
I get a lot of, I got a lot of backlash, especially when the page started to, people started to realize, like look at the page and whatever. And it was a lot of, oh, if you don't want to get spiked, then you shouldn't go outside. If you don't want to spike, you shouldn't drink. That I only shared my story of spiking to prove how attractive I am to men, which is quite funny.
Wow.
And then obviously just like slut shaming kind of stuff as well. Like I must have been wearing something. I must have been behaving in a certain way. I must have been talking to a certain person that I deserved it. And we delve a lot into that. I think it's the fourth episode of the podcast. And that was really insightful for me because I think I already knew, but that whole side of things is definitely playing a massive part in what's going on.
In what way?
I would say that I would argue that in this country, the rise of incel culture should be on the same level as terrorism. I think it's really, really terrifying. I watched the Louis Theroux documentary the other day. And the fact that they're approaching young boys all over the world through things like Fortnite and stuff and telling them that women are these awful people and, you know, that we deserve to be broken down and we should be in the kitchens all day and stuff. And, you know, young people are really, really impressionable. And I think it's just terrifying because I think living in my little bubble that we're moving away from that kind of misogyny, but I think we might be taking a couple steps back if we don't do something soon. And for me as well, like one of the things that I'm working towards next is about sex education in schools. I don't know about you, but my sex education was basically non-existent, which I think was terrible, and I think it fails a lot of young people. And I'm not saying all issues can be fixed by this, but something as simple as, I'm not talking about we have to go into the deep depths of things, especially for younger kids, but just even talking about how to have a healthy relationship and what consent is and stuff from a young age. I think it's really, really important. And especially in combating hearing stuff from TikTok or hearing stuff from Twitter about how you should treat women, actually having these open, honest discussions from a young age is really, really important.
I agree. It's actually something I've been thinking about a lot recently, because, and this is going to make me sound really old, I mean, I am quite significantly older than you, but like porn wasn't readily available other than kind of odd bits on the internet wasn't around when I was a teenager in the way that it is now. And, you know, if you've got extreme access to porn, and, you know, as we know, that can ladder right down to the very extreme end. If this is the version of sexual relationships that you're seeing, you're forming extremely skewed views of how that should look.
I mean, there's stuff like date rape porn. Do you know what I mean? So you're watching something like that and you think that putting something in someone's drink in order to have sexual relations with them is okay, you know? I don't want to like patronize young people, but I was impressionable when
that's a teenager. Being young. You're learning about the world. Yeah.
So if that's what you're seeing and that's what you're ingesting, it's gonna go one way. And I think it's something that is really, really important and something that we need to look deeper into. Obviously anyone can have their drink spiked, you know, regardless of your gender, your sexuality, your race. But it's hard to ignore the facts when it does seem to be predominantly happening to women. And I think it's something that we need to look into a bit more, basically.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole bigger question, isn't it, about how these guys are ending up in this place, what their role is, because, I don't know, this feels like it gets quite heavy. I don't think we're in a time of great misogyny. I think that we have moved on, but there's something that's happening where men obviously aren't feeling that they've got a place in the world anymore, and so they've laddered so far down a certain way because, you know, think of your male mate who was the one who did pick up on the fact that you were not yourself the next day. He did that, you know, that's everything you, I hope that I raise my daughter and my sons to be like that. But it's really terrifying, isn't it?
It's hard to ignore the facts. I mean, like last year, big cases of women being murdered in the street in a lot, like sometimes in daytime. And the misogyny in the police force, like comments that were coming out from the police force, like it's hard to ignore these things and that they still happen around us. And I think we need to be very aware that they are happening and it is still a problem. And what are we doing to tackle that?
And then to come back to the subject of spiking, how you don't want to get into a place where it's women taking the precautions. You know, we've had all these conversations about it's the girls running. I run home from the train station with my keys in my hands. It's me who knows how to what I should and shouldn't wear. And I actually, as we were talking, I do remember. You know, I don't go. Won't be a surprise to you that I don't go out clubbing anymore. But I remember walking around with my hand over my drink all the time. And I wonder if I said to any of my guy mates, "Oh, is that a behavior that you've ever had to think about?" Probably not.
I think like when we open these conversations, like a lot of guys that I speak to, they don't have any idea that we walk home with earphones in but with no music playing because we need to be aware of our surroundings, or we walk home with our keys between our fingers just in case someone attacks us. Like that is ingrained in us from such a young age that is how we should behave. Like it kind of almost is instinctual, because I don't remember anyone telling me
what you've got to do.
You just know. And it's funny that we all have this awareness around, like, all women do the same thing, but men just don't even have to think about that. I mean, Sadiq Khan released a new campaign for violence against women and girls. I think it was yesterday. And it's called #HaveAWord. And I think that in itself is just important. It's about men calling up other men on, say, for example, your guy mate's catcalling a woman. Just being like, don't do that.
No, it's not cool.
I think there is a power in that because it's like your peer support. Like if you're all egging each other on, like it's obviously they're going to do it. So I think, I don't know.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And actually that Louis Theroux series, the one that's out now, which has some really awkward moments in it, which is brilliant. But the thing I've taken away from all the episodes that I've watched so far is this idea of one-upmanship. And that, you know, one person catcalls and then the next person catcalls in a more extreme way. And then you do this and then you do that. And that is how, and especially when you're young and impressionable. And I relate to versions of that, you know, always trying to be the, one up your mates to impress them. And actually, if you take away that culture and just be like, no, this is not we're not laddering down this. Because what starts off as, again, in that series is a lot of, it's just jokes. Well, it's not, is it? And when does a joke not become a joke? And when does a joke become threatening?
This is what I say about like the trolling that I receive. Someone asked me, how far off do you think trolling someone is from spiking? And I said, not far off at all.
No.
Because at the end of the day, they're both anonymous crimes. Trolling is anonymous because you're behind a computer screen and no one's going to know who you are. Spiking is also anonymous because of the way we've allowed it to happen in this country, that someone can do it and get away with it. The person that spiked me is anonymous. I don't know who they are. They got away with it. So they're really not far apart. So it's like, when do people take it offline, and what makes them take it offline? And it is part of that one-upping each other, you know. I think spiking viral injection is a prime example of that. It's another one-up.
Yeah.
You know, and then people got the same idea and started doing it in other places. Well, so
that, exactly that. And you said, oh, you know, it just started happening here, there and everywhere. Well, that's exactly what happens. That's trends, isn't it? Everyone just loves a trend. But you're right with the trolling, you know, having, of course, I've got a platform, being at the receiving end of some of it, and you can't explain to anyone how that feels in your body if you've been if you've experienced it over a sustained time, and it has hit a nerve. And yeah, on the one hand, of course, it's just internal, so nothing happens, but it the trauma stays with you. Exactly,
100%.
And it's, yeah, but the anonymity of it is exactly what the problem is. I can't think of a more intelligent language other than it's just pussy behavior, isn't it? It's like,
it is, and a lot of people do hide behind that. And yeah, spiking itself is pussy behavior, it's prick behavior.
But
it's a big problem. And I think, you know, I always say this, there's been people that have been campaigning against spiking long before me, and there's going to be people long after me if we don't make any change soon. So I'm not the first, and I won't be the last, basically.
No, but as you say, it's very hard to go, okay, right, this, A, it's not a criminal offence, B, it doesn't really show up in your body, C, like, yeah, there's no physical evidence of it. So where do we begin? Number one, as you say, it is this talking about it, and I guess putting it, unfortunately, back front and centre that this is a real problem.
Yeah. So I think in terms of like steps moving forward is just opening the conversation and talking about it and speaking about it with your friends and stuff. I mean, I offer posters to like pubs, bars, clubs, festivals and stuff up and down the country, and literally just tell you the signs of someone that's been spiked and what you can do to help. And I've been like in toilets at bars where they've got my posters up, and like I'll be in the toilet and then I hear women coming in and they're talking about my poster. And I'll come out the toilet and I'm like, not to be a weirdo, not that I was eavesdropping on your conversation, but
I am, yeah.
I am. And I made those posters, and this is exactly why I made them, because I want people to talk about it and to talk about it with their mates. And they were like, oh, we were just discussing that the other night when we went to a club, we thought this girl had been spiked, but we didn't really know whether she had or not, and we wish we would have done something more. So it's like that kind of side of things. Needs to, like, we just need to keep talking about it, and people need to know what they can do to help someone that's been spiked, because as we discussed, you know, if you've been spiked, there's not much you can do. And that includes like bar staff as well, and security needs to get better at dealing with it instead of just kicking people out onto the street in a vulnerable state. And then like I want to like increase like bystander training in schools and universities of what they can do to help. But obviously that kind of makes it a community issue, when really we should probably be focusing on the people that actually do it.
It's really difficult. It's similar to trolling. You go, why on earth would someone do it? Why would? But I can't help but think that this comes back to a wider societal issue, that people have lost their way so much that this is what they resort to.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, in terms of changes to the legal system, and hopefully we can prosecute more people, for the police to take this seriously and this issue seriously. I mean, it might sound childish or whatever, but when I got spiked, I didn't understand why the police couldn't keep like almost like a tally chart of this person got spiked in this bar, and then the next week someone also got spiked in this bar, and then maybe they can clock trends, because I clearly watch a lot of documentaries, but Stacey Dooley did a documentary on stalking recently, and they said that stalking is like a pattern crime. So really? It might be like loads of small things, but they, in order to clock the pattern, they have to track it.
Yeah,
all of the little things that happen, and then they can build up a bigger picture. And I think it's the same as spiking, because then you could be more aware of where it's happening, and you can probably track down the person that's doing it.
Yeah.
If it's the same person going to a bar time and time again, if we're not keeping any record of that, that just seems ridiculous. But obviously in terms of testing as well, and making testing more accessible, because if the police won't investigate without tests, then we need to make testing more more available. When my sister went to A&E, they told my sister to go to A&E, and then they just said, oh, we don't do forensic testing here. And that was it.
That's that.
And she was actually in a time frame where it could have been caught in her system, and she was just turned down. And I hear that from a lot of victims. They're getting ping pong from place to place with no one taking responsibility.
So where is the right place? So do you say she went to the police first? No, went to A&E first.
She went to the police first. They told her to go to A&E. Then my mum went back to the police and said they don't do forensic testing. And then they said they can't investigate further.
Wow.
And that was it. So it's like, we need a space in between where we can get, where people can access the testing, you know, the blood testing, the urine tests, whatever they need.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, I guess my job is trying to work out where that place will be, or where that place will fit, or if we need to create something new. Yeah.
Because, yeah, they would be the two places that you would go to, wouldn't it be, like one or the other? And we also got a time in a time when people are better at testing, that the idea of testing yourself, in fact, as well, could be an option. If it's urine, for example, why can't you get a hold of that at a pharmacy, the whatever test you need to? I mean, I'm being very naive because I'm not a scientist, but it's absolutely vital in order to do the next step, isn't it?
100%. I mean, if they won't investigate without it, then it's crucial that we get it.
Have you told the venue that it happened, where it happened?
So after it happened to me, my mum emailed the venue, and it took a while for them to respond. Mm. And then when they finally did respond, and she went to go and view the CCTV, she asked me if I wanted to come. I said no, I didn't want to see. I wasn't really in a place to see that right. Like I could watch it right now, but I was not able to watch it at that time.
Fair enough.
And she just said to me, oh, it's really awful, but basically the security camera, I guess this is another part to play, is that venues need to take more responsibility. The security camera that looks over the bar, where I believe I was spiked, and it obviously is so important for a business in terms of people taking money from the till, people taking alcohol. And then also in terms of people's safety, it was covered by fairy lights. So she couldn't actually, you couldn't see anything. But she did see me. She said, you went up the stairs and you were Maya, and you came down the stairs and I didn't recognize that person.
Really?
And so it happened so quickly. These drugs had such an effect on me so quickly that my mum wasn't able to recognize me, and she's seen me drunk.
Yeah.
She was like, that was not you.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, the venue has actually since closed down. So, you know, because it would be kind of weirdly like a nice thing to work with them maybe on some stuff, but they've since closed down, so I don't think that's possible. But
that no venue wants this to be part of their culture either, do they? You know, like you say, if you were tracking where this happened often, something would change, because you wouldn't want to become they want their customers to be safe, surely.
Yeah, 100%. So that's why I've always I've endorsed spaces that want to make themselves safe, because as I said before, I love going out, I love clubbing, I love the whole culture of it. It's a massive part of my life, and I think it's a massive part of every young person's life, and it's really crucial. You know, a lot of people find their tribes through stuff like that. There's other ways, obviously, but you know, it's important to a lot of people, especially like in my community, like young queer people finding their space and finding people, you know, finding their chosen family. A lot of it does happen around clubbing and nightlife culture. So for me, it's really important to help support bars and pubs and clubs to make their spaces safer. And that's why I did the poster outreach, because it was similar to that of like Ask Angela or other kind of posters you see on toilets. But I thought it was a good way to kind of connect with places that are trying to make their spaces safer.
Has it changed the way you behave or you think when you go out, or have you kind of pushed against that so that you don't change yourself?
I think I'm more aware, and I'm more aware for the people around me as well. Just like it's a weird one, because sometimes like I go out like in my area, and people are like, oh, like if someone's like passed out, it's like, oh, it's okay, I've been spiked here. And it's like, I'm just a 23-year-old woman. I don't have any training. Obviously, I'm more aware of like what the signs are and stuff, because I've researched this time and time again. But I don't think I've not allowed it to change me. You know, kind of refused. I refuse to live in fear of being spiked, basically, again, because that's no way to live your life. Like, if I was scared of everything all the time, I wouldn't leave the house because I was scared of getting hit by a car.
No, it's true. You know? It's true.
So for me, and that also would be giving the person what they wanted and would be giving the trolls what they want. They don't want me to go out. That's what they say. They don't want me to go out. If I don't want to go out, if I don't want to get spiked, I shouldn't go out. So yeah, there's definitely internally something where I'm a bit more aware, a bit more tapped in, but yeah, I can't let it change my behaviour.
No. It all feels deeply frustrating, doesn't it? And that's not even the right word. I guess all you can do, well, you're doing it, I'm going to hopefully try and do it a bit with this podcast, is just raise awareness of it. And I'm in a funny position because, yeah, I don't really go out clubbing anymore, but I'm raising the next generation that will.
Yeah.
And I had really, really naively thought this is a problem that had shifted. And that, the only reason I've thought that is because it's not in my reality anymore. But mm-hmm. yeah, from what you're saying, there's a good chance it would happen to one of my kids, which is a really terrifying thought. And it's how you educate them, I guess, to keep, as you're saying, it's to that bystander thing and to mm-hmm. be able to spot things and an awareness that this does happen.
Yeah, it's just about being aware that it does happen and how to help people as well, I think, is really important for them to watch out, for people to just watch out for their peers as well.
Yeah.
You know, so we can all be safe.
Yeah, that is a real, I think it is quite implicit, as I can only speak as a group of girls. It was always that thing of, like, you're not ever letting someone go home on their own, never popping them in a cab. Someone's always got to go back with them. And it is that same thing if you're all out together. Even if you've got a friend who's a bit more, seemingly more wild, kind of not letting them find themselves in those really vulnerable positions, because, yeah, working as a group is helpful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think there's definitely a power in peer support and, like, looking out for each other. In the same way, there's a power on the negative side of peer action, you know, people encouraging each other for bad behaviour. We can also encourage good behaviour, and we can, like, combat some of the issues, but really I think to see big change we need to see some big systemic change, which is hopefully on the horizon. I can only hope, but basically I'll keep working until we see that change.
Yeah, and things getting into the zeitgeist, exactly like you say, all these the terrifying idea that things are collectively skewing the wrong way, we can collectively skew it the right way, and have things in the conversation and in the zeitgeist of something that we're thinking about only feels like a good thing.
100%.
If you've got kind of one key message that you'd like to end on, what would that be, do you think?
I think I would always say, like, if you have been spiked, it's not your fault. And there are people that will listen to you and will hear you. And there are resources that can help you now. And not to blame yourself, and if you feel up to it, like, do report it to the police, because I've had a troubled experiences with the police, you know, especially through campaigning and stuff, and yeah, it's been difficult, but I do think that there are people that will listen to you. If it's not the police, then it's your friends, it's your family. But I think there has to be a power in reporting somewhere. I'm struggling to find it, but I think the more of us come forward, the more that we can treat this as the serious issue that it is. So, yeah, it's just not about not blaming yourself, I think, because I blamed myself for a long time, and I think it only hurt me. It didn't hurt anyone else.
No, and with nearly everything, just keeping things internal or behind closed doors doesn't move things forward.
No.
I think that's good. But you did that very well. Well done.
Thank you. Tell you've been doing this with me.
I've got two more questions before I end. Number one, where can people find you?
You can find I've Been Spiked on all platforms at I've Been Spiked. And then I also post stuff, I guess, on my accounts, which is at Maya Howells across all platforms. Spelt really bizarrely.
Yeah,
the Welsh spelling.
Is that what it is? Welsh? I thought it might be something
Welsh.
Like that.
Yeah.
A quick promo of your podcast too.
Yeah, Pricks is available to listen across all podcast platforms. It's a limited series, so all of the episodes are up. You don't have to wait weekly. And yeah, it's 5 episodes. They're not too long. You can listen to them on like a dog walk, and hopefully you learn something from it, or at least you learn the impact on the victim from listening to this podcast. I think I'm really, really proud of it, and I think it's really, really important for people to listen to. So if you want to listen, it's Pricks on all streaming platforms.
Great. I love that you decided to drop them all in one go, because in podcasts it is kind of usually quite old school, isn't it, the weekly drops? But I think it's I think for something like this, if you want to just deeply get your head into one subject, it's nice to have them all available.
Yeah, you can listen to them all at one go, or you can take your time, but yeah. I think because it will feed into each other, it does make sense that you can listen to them all at once.
Yeah, I love that. And lastly, if you can have an honest conversation with one person, who would it be and what would you say?
Oh my God. Is this like dead or alive?
A bit like that. People have given a real variety of answers to here, so go with whatever you feel.
I would love to speak to Amy Winehouse. She's like, I've got a lot of respect for her. I think obviously people have got mixed opinions in terms of about addiction and stuff. I've had like family experience of addiction, and I just think she's an amazing, unapologetic woman. And I think she really shaped me, you know, growing up, like listening to people like her or people like Lily Allen really shaped me into who I am. So I think I'd love to have a conversation about being a woman in the industry and just, yeah, killing it and just being really good at your trade, basically.
Yeah, it's so true. Like the ongoing legacy of people like her is only just beginning to be seen for people who grew up with them, you know, in their ears. Exactly that. How old would you have been when you were listening to her to begin with?
Really, really little.
Really?
I remember I had her on my iPod because my mum used to listen to her. How old was I when... Well, I'm only 23 now.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think how old she'd be now, like mid-30s maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
I was young.
You were young.
But I've been listening to music from a very, very young age, but she was always an artist that stuck with me. And yeah, I really admire her. So
that's a good choice. It wasn't what, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, good choice. I mean, any choice would be good, but it's always like quite interesting who people are saying. Well, thank you so much. This has been really uncomfortable, but a real education piece. And I'm going to go and try and learn some more about it as well and look for all the gaps in the system, I suppose.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
I wonder whether we're gonna, like, the universe is gonna make us bump into each other on this street.
It seems a bit weird that we live right near each other. We haven't so far, so now's the time.
Well, that was an informative, is that the right word, episode. And actually, just off mic, I've been chatting to producer Steve, and I want to try and get the proper stats for you, but this is definitely something that happens across both genders. It's more prevalent in females, but that isn't to say that it isn't also a problem with guys. And as Maya touched on, this is a phenomenon that doesn't discriminate. That being said, it does feel like there's a big issue that needs to be solved, and the obvious way is for greater awareness when you're out and about, but that just feels like the tip of the iceberg. But I have really taken away that bystander awareness. I can't think of the number of times that I've seen, particularly girls, people being what appears to be more than drunk and just thinking, oh, you know, they're having a big night, but actually they could be a victim of this. So that's something to be aware of. And really do go and check out their podcast, Maya's podcast, Pricked, and go and find her Instagram. I've been spiked. It's a resource of great information. I'm really interested to see where the journey goes for her. Overall, thank you so much for listening to But Why. I'm always glad to have you here, and I'm really glad to be able to learn a little bit about so many important subjects. If you want to get in touch, I'd always love to hear from you. I'm always available to, I'm really always open to guest suggestions. You can get in touch on Instagram or on email, butwhy@clemmytelford.com. I am now off to the post office. I am posting a collection of retro recipe books that I found in amongst Ben's great aunt's belongings. And I'm sending them to my friend Sophie, who has an Instagram account called Kitchen, as in Kitchen Confidential. And she is cooking loads of retro recipes. It's brilliant, it's beautifully styled, and it also shows some of the very interesting food habits that have gone on during the years. So I'm going to go and post those recipe books to her. Wishing you a really lovely day, and catch up with you next week. Goodbye.